But...
He stopped to listen.
Yes, sir, I understand, but...
He again stopped to listen.
Do you want something else?
Mrs. Daly asked me.
Oh, no, thank you.
Does Doggy want a bone?
No,
I laughed.
He has to watch his weight. He's getting real fat.
I knew she was trying to keep me from overhearing the phone call, and she did.
All right, sir. 5 o'clock,
he said, and hung up. He came back to the table, but said nothing. It was almost like the phone call had never happened. I was sure they were going to talk after I went to bed. I decided to help that along a little.
I'm very sleepy,
I said.
Could I go to bed now?
Sure you can, she said. You don't have to ask permission.
I got up from the chair.
Do you need any help?
No, thank you.
All right,
she said.
Why don't you get ready and I'll come and tuck you in?
Okay,
I said, and left the room. I went down the hall to the bedroom and opened the door.
I'm sorry about this, Doggy, but I just gotta know what's going on.
He understood. I placed him on the bed and doubled back down the hall.
It could mean your job,
she said. I know, but I just can't see sending him to Martin Hall.
And nothing from Sal?
Nothing. I'm sure if he knew, he would take him. Look, he said, if it's all right with you, we'll just keep him and weather the storm.
Oh, I love you, she said.
I backed down the hall and slipped into the bedroom.
Phew,
I breathed out.
He's going to get in trouble if we stay, Doggy. What do you think?
Doggy didn't know.
This is a fine time for you to stop talking to me. Now let me think.
I tapped my upper lip.
Let's see now. She said it could mean your job. What does that mean?
Doggy didn't know.
You're no help, I said. I think it means they won't let him be a policeman anymore if he keeps me. What do you think?
He agreed.
Officer Daly said the important thing to think about when you run away is to be sure you have an honest good reason. I think this is an honest good reason, Doggy.
I looked through the bed chest for a piece of paper and a pencil.
Aren't you ready for bed?
Mrs. Daly asked as she came into the bedroom.
Not yet. Can I help you? I was just looking for some paper and a pencil.
Whatever for?
Do you want to write to someone?
No. I wanted to draw a picture.
Now? Aren't you tired?
A little, but I wanted to...
You don't have to explain, she said. If you want paper and a pencil, you'll have them.
She left the room.
Gosh, Doggy,
I said.
I sure wish we could stay here.
Mrs. Daly brought me the paper and pencil, then helped me change into my pajamas. When I was finished in the bathroom, I got into bed. Officer Daly said good night from the doorway.
Sir?
Yes?
Thank you for everything.
Anytime, son. I'll see you tomorrow.
Now, little fella,
she said as she brought the blanket up to my chin.
Tomorrow afternoon, I'm going to find a school for you to go to. What do you think about that?
That would be nice. Now get some sleep. If you want to draw, the paper's there. But there'll be plenty of time to do that tomorrow.
All right.
She kissed me and started to leave.
Please don't go.
She came back and sat down.
What's the matter?
She asked.
Are you frightened of something?
No.
You look upset.
No. I just wanted to hug you, that's all.
She put her arms around me and hugged me. I tried to loosen the words in my throat, but I couldn't. She rocked and hugged me for a few minutes before she left. I lay in the dark, thinking. There was no other way. I couldn't let Officer Daly get in trouble over me. I got out of bed and put on the lamp. I wrote,
Dear Officer and Mrs. Daly, thank you for wanting to keep me. I don't want to get you into bad trouble, so I have to go. Thank you for the turkey and the movies and the other stuff. Jennings and Doggy.
I lay awake for hours until I was sure they were asleep. I got up and packed my things in the laundry bag. I got dressed, slipped Doggy into the bag, then climbed out the window. I walked in the same direction they walked when they took me shopping. I ducked in and out of doorways. I didn't want to be spotted by anyone and taken to jail. I remembered the upstairs train station near the zoo when I saw another one just like it. I went up to the man in the change booth. I asked him how to get to Boston Road and Tremont Avenue. I knew it was better to ask him that than how to get to the zoo, especially in the middle of the night.
Are you lost, Sonny?
Gosh, I thought. I wish big people would stop asking me if I'm lost. Don't they think kids ever know where they're going?
No, sir. I'm not lost. I'm here. But it's 5 o'clock in the morning. What's a little kid like you doing out at this hour? Asking you how to get to Boston.
I know that, he said. But ain't it kind of late for you to be out?
Gosh, I said. I thought it was early. He laughed.
You win, kid. Well, let me make a call. I'll get you directions.
I ducked down below his window and ran for the stairs. I heard him yelling as I reached the street.
Which way?
I said out loud to myself.
Pick one.
I picked one and started walking. I walked a few blocks, staying very close to the stores and ducking in every so often. I saw a police car with its lights flashing speed down the street toward the train station.
Now, I said, I'll find out which way Boston Road is.
I stepped into a doorway and waited. I watched the police car stop. About 2 minutes later, it turned around and zoomed past me. I smiled to myself. I knew the man in the change booth told the policeman what directions I had asked for. I also knew the police car would go that way. I arrived at the zoo a few hours later. I slipped beneath the fence and carefully made my way to the pine bushes. It was still cold, but at least the snow was almost all melted. I lay down and took Doggy from the bag. We were tired.
We're never going to leave here, I said. It's too dangerous. If we go out again and get caught, it means we go to jail.
I hugged Doggy to my cheek. He knew we could never leave. I lay back and fell asleep. I woke up to the sound of lots of voices. For a second, I didn't know where I was. I popped my head out and saw dozens of kids all dressed the same.
That's a bunch of school kids, I told Doggy. Now we'll get some food.
I jumped from the bushes and followed them. I stayed with them all afternoon. I couldn't believe how much stuff they threw away. I made several trips back and forth to my hideout. I got popcorn, pretzels, and French fried potatoes. I even got a cheese sandwich. Someone had thrown it away without even opening it. I had enough food for a week.
You know, Doggy, I said, if we get a crowd of kids like that every week, we wouldn't ever have to worry about food.
He agreed. Later that night, I was lying on some rocks near the hideout. I wasn't worried about the guard. He carried a light, and I could easily see him coming. It started to rain.
Oh, gosh,
I said. I gathered up Doggy and all my stuff. I stashed all the food and my laundry bag deep in the bushes. I made my way over to the Lion House. There was a back staircase with a deep doorway where I could stand. I stood there all night. In the morning, the rain still continued to drizzle. I carefully made my way back to my hideout to eat. Deep under the bushes, I found it wasn't all that wet. I ate and went to sleep. The rain finally stopped toward evening. The sun was just setting, and I was cold.
I sure am glad we got this food, Doggy.
He was, too.
I wish I had a comic book or some baseball cards to read.
I lay back against the trunk of the bush.
I think, more than anything, Doggy, I wish you could really talk.
He laughed. I hugged him and kissed his nose. I heard some voices.
Uh-oh,
I whispered. I clasped my hand over Doggy's mouth. I sat up a little. I wanted to see out through some of the spaces in the pine needles. The voices got louder.
There's a whole bunch of people coming, I said to myself. There shouldn't be. The zoo is closed.
Just then, someone yelled,
Jennings!
Chills ran all over me and my heart stopped. I clutched Doggy tightly in my arms and listened.
Yoo-hoo, where are you?
The voice sang out.
Jennings!
Suddenly, I saw them. I ripped open the bushes and sprang onto the path.
Sal!
I screamed.
Sal!
He crouched down and opened his arms. Officer Daly and a patrol guard were standing alongside him. I ran up and into Sal's open arms. He lifted me high in the air, then swung me around. He brought me down to his chest and cradled me.
"Sal!"
I cried.
"You came for me! You came for me!"
"Yes, I did, son." He hugged me tightly.
"Well, I'll be," Officer Daly said. "How did you know he'd be here?"
Sal laughed. "I know my son," he said. He tried wiping some of the tears streaming down my face.
Sal.
"What is it, son? What are you trying to say?"
"I'm trying to say, I love you."
"I love you too." He hugged and kissed me.
"I love you,"
I cried.
"I love you, I love you, I love you."
Epilogue. A lot has happened since that November day back in 1952. Sal kept his word and stayed with us. He saw Jean and me through our teenage years. He helped us with school, took us on summer truck trips, and was as close to us as any father would have been. He is retired now and lives on Long Island with a woman he married back in the 70s. He has raised her children, too. Mom recovered from her back and neck injuries some 5 years later. But those years took a heavy toll on her. She has never since been quite free of illness or pain. She lives in New Jersey. George is married and lives in the East with his wife and children. Although he's had some troubled years, he is now a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Walter continued his education until he reached that place of safety. He lives with his family in the Midwest. Larry ran from one place to another, from one thing to another. He is estranged from his wife and children and lives somewhere in the East. Jerome came home for short periods of time until 1958. He then came home and stayed until his death in 1961. He was 21 years old. Jean learned computer operations while he served in the Marine Corps. He now lives and works on the West Coast. As for the others, the Dalys, the Frasers, Martha, and Stacy, they are my memories. Clarence said it best when he said, "And now I got's room for more." I was a police officer in the late 60s when I adopted my daughter Carolyn. That's one less animal they'll have to cage at night. And last, but not least, Doggy is still with me. He hasn't learned how to talk yet, but we do understand each other. Doggy, say hi. This is Jim Meskimen. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of They Cage the Animals at Night by Jennings Michael Birch. This program was directed by Francis Loy, executive producer Dan Musselman. Text copyright 1984 by Jennings Michael Birch. Production copyright 2018, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.